I love this. This is being recorded to the cloud because we're not doing any edits. We are. This is Grit and Grace live.
Oh, gosh. So scary. Here we go.
Oh, my goodness. So for our friends who are listening, welcome. We are so glad you are here. And Amy and I have not seen each other. This episode is being recorded a week later than we meant to do it. Some people will do just about anything to get out of a commitment that they might have been avoiding. So Amy, what was your method to avoid last week's
recording? The big C finally got me.
I'm so sorry.
Yes, I had COVID last week. So I by far did not have the worst case, but I didn't have the lightest case either. My little cute 80-year-old mama got it. And she was like, oh, I was a little hoarse and a little tired. And I'm like, yeah, I was relegated to the couch for 3 or 4 days. So anyway, but I'm glad to be back this week. And hey, listen, I have COVID brain, so I cannot be held responsible for anything I say today.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So I'm responsible for what I say, but you're totally off the hook. Well, I am very, very glad that you're doing okay. When you texted me a week ago, I was in that, muscle past the gag reflex, white knuckle it. I can do this. We're going to record this episode. I'm not going to cry. This is going to be hard, but I'm going to
do it. We're totally going to cry.
Okay, I had totally psyched myself up that I could do this hard thing. And then I get your text message and I'm like, don't feel happy that Amy has COVID. Don't feel happy that Amy has COVID. These are two separate things. Be sad that Amy has COVID. It's terrible that she has no voice and can't talk. It's terrible. And oh, good. We don't have to record this episode today. So,
yes. Well, you've had a few crazy things going on in your world also.
Well, you know, one of the main reasons I was not in a good headspace last week, besides the fact that we were scheduled to record the last regularly scheduled episode of Grit and Grace, the podcast, is that for the last 6 or 7 weeks now, I'm doing the math. It's 8 weeks. The home that we live in has been having some major renovations done. And let me just start by expressing publicly as many times as I can gratitude towards the generous donor who has donated funds to Monterey Bay Academy specifically to upgrade key rooms in faculty member homes. And when I say upgrade, Amy, I mean, they came in and ripped out our old kitchen and we have custom cabinetry. We have all new appliances. Like it is, the workmanship is exquisite. My dad was a carpenter when he was a kid and he had a workshop in our garage when I was growing up. I mean, I love the smell of sawdust, but I also know what a well-done corner looks like. And so, I mean, I can see these drawers, you push them and then they finish closing themselves and you shut the doors and they finish shutting themselves. I mean, it's amazing. And not, but, and the number of people who are like, oh, Sherry, you must be so excited. Now let's be clear. We live without a kitchen for 5 weeks. I'm a highly sensitive person. Daniel's not only an HSP, he's on the autism spectrum. And so he has even more elevated sensory challenges than I do. We have a geriatric diabetic cat with high anxiety. And at any point in time, we had workmen in and out, all the, you know, and then the noise and the dust. Nobody warned me about the dust. I mean, the dust is amazing.
It's terrible.
So,
yeah.
When people say, you must be so excited, I say, I'll be excited about the end results when I'm done being overwhelmed by the process. Last week, I was still in the completely overwhelmed, ready to cry at anything stage. And we've had a whole week now of no work. They're going to be doing a couple of other things, but not for a few more weeks. So I'm much more grounded. My sensory overstimulation has wound, dialed it down, and I'm feeling much more normal. I mean, there is something about having almost no agency over your own space, over your own atmosphere that's wearing. So
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And remember the last two books I've written, I've decided to do big renovation projects.
I don't understand. Like,
what's wrong with me? What's
on purpose. Wrong with me? I totally do not understand.
Well, speaking of renovations, today we're going to tackle all the renovations that have happened to Grit and Grace over the years and in us. Oh.
Well, this is Sherry Gregory.
And I'm Amy Carroll.
And you're listening to Grit and Grace, the podcast that equips you to lose who you're not, love who you are, and live your one life well.
In fact, you're listening to our final episode before we go on an indefinite hiatus.
Notice how I gave you that line. I did not take that line for myself.
I forget, like, we're not editing, so I just repeated it. In the future, I'll just stumble and we won't worry about it.
All right. So before we dive into today's topic, which is ending well, let's do a little bit of professional catch up. So, oh my goodness, I had your book here and then I've been cleaning out my office, so I can't hold it up right now because I truly have no clue where I knew where it was a week ago. I want credit for knowing where it was a week ago.
And I don't have one either.
Okay. So tell us a bit about your launch and how you're doing and how your newest book baby is doing.
Well, Esther, Seeing Our Invisible God in an Uncertain World, the study that I have written with Lynn Cowell came out on July 12th. And we are so thrilled. This project was so long. It was the longest labor ever to get this book baby out into the world. And the week before it came out, I seriously hit this place where I was like, I'm so over it. I'm really just over it. Like, forget about Esther, whatever.
Such a good place for the author of a Bible study to be.
No, but the minute, and I should have known that this was coming because I'm an ambivert, but my extrovert side is the side that just loves the interaction around a book. And so all the stuff leading up to the book is difficult for me every single time. But once the book is out in the world and there's interactions and conversations around the book, we're so excited. And, you know, we had a couple of pieces of feedback that just really have fed my soul. One of them was our friend Cecile Valoria. And she said, this is the nitty gritty version of Esther. And you know, my rebel rule follower self just loves that this is the nitty gritty version. And then Barb Roos, you know, we just love her so much on Grit and Grace. Mm. And Barb has been such an encourager. And she said, Amy and Lynn, I have read the book of Esther and studied it many times. It's one of her favorites. And she said, you guys brought up things I have never seen before.
Oh.
So that was like the highest compliment. So yeah, we are, I'm loving it. I'm loving talking about it.
Mm.
I have this whole new spin of messages to give to from the stage about it and can't wait to do all that too. So how about you? What's happening?
Well, wait. No, there are a couple more things I want to highlight here. Okay. So first of all, before the launch, I was expecting you to feel really pressured and you got some news that made you feel like there's not as much pressure on you. Can you share that with our friends who are listening?
Yeah, it was real interesting that our publishers let us know that Bible studies have kind of a different life than mm-hmm. regular books do. Like, so when regular books come out, like Exhale, when Exhale comes out, you know, the publishing world, the publishers expect you to make this huge splash. Because if you don't get people's attention when it first comes out, then there are 5 new books coming out or 20 new books coming out the next week. And your moment in the sun is over, but Bible studies are different and they have a longer life because people look for specific books of the Bible to study. I was really encouraged because on launch week, we were in the top 100 Bible studies and on Amazon, which was
congratulations.
Lovely. And we were, I think, 96. And number 94 was Beth Moore's Esther study.
Oh, my.
Yeah. And so, I mean, of course, she's had much greater longevity, but I looked back and it was 2008. And I was like, oh, Esther, you know, because like Esther, I think I talked about, was not one of my favorite books of the Bible, but she just continues to be a favorite of women. So I have great hope for our Esther study that she'll be around for a long time.
That's cool. I just love that you didn't end up feeling the pressure to have huge sales and crank out the numbers and push, which is not that. I mean, that just isn't your natural personality at all. So this feels like it's been much more in alignment with who you are.
I actually feel like I found my sweet spot in this style of writing. The Inscribed series really, you know, is kind of a hybrid of a trade book and a Bible study. Nice. And I just really love that. And I have ideas. I know. So maybe another one. We'll see.
Is this Amy Carroll who swore she'd never write another book?
I know. And it's such a... I'm not going to say anything about it, but it's such a weird idea that it just might work.
Oh, quirky. Yeah. More quirky is coming from Amy Carroll. Well, and then the other thing I wanted to point out, since you just kind of slipped it in there, but I just want to say this loud and clear to our friends who are listening. Amy is available to speak for your women's retreats on this topic of Esther from a perspective you and your women have not heard about it from before. So go to AmyCarroll.org, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Amy Carroll, that's two L's at the end of Carroll.org. And you can connect with her to book her for upcoming retreats. It's so exciting to me that more and more in-person events are starting to happen again. I know different parts of the country have been more or less, but as they are becoming more of a norm again, Amy Carroll could be one of your first speakers.
I just had to say that. Love that.
All right.
So Sherry, tell us. Yeah.
Yeah. What I've been up to professionally, one of the most recent things that I've been doing, we'll be talking more later about just kind of what we'll be doing now that we won't be doing Grit and Grace anymore. But one of the things I just finished doing is a program called, a group coaching pilot program called Candid Conversations About Ministry and Money. And you actually, Amy, were kind enough to share it with your Next Step email list. And the women that I coach as writers and coaches and speakers, one of the hangups they often have is they might be transitioning from a more ministry-based way of approaching what they do to needing to make money with it so they can continue doing it. So they're shifting more into a business. And you and I have had this conversation. We don't have a word for that. Like, you don't say minibuzz or ministry. Like, there's no word for this. Like, yes. And for a woman who's talking about Jesus and sharing her heart, it's a little weird to call it a business. And yet to call it a ministry often implies that it's being done without any form of compensation. And that's a 100% valid model. But if somebody needs or wants or being called for it to have aspects of business, then it can be a little tricky. And so what I have found from my own experience and the women that I coach is that even talking about the money piece can just be so challenging and can become very garbled and can just, and if the woman herself is feeling uncomfortable, then of course her or the people she's trying to reach are feeling that discomfort and insecurity. And so I wanted to develop a program, but I didn't even know what it would look like or include. And so as part of my graduate research, I have done research into things like imposter syndrome and women in business. I mean, like one of the articles I read is literally called Women Don't Ask. Like women don't ask for the sale. They don't ask for the money or whatever. And so much of it was peer-reviewed secular research that I then kind of pulled together. Oh, and a lot of research on highly sensitive persons, because that's primarily who I coach. And so because those of us who are HSP tend to be extra high on conscientiousness, which is kind of a safety sort of a thing, which means that any form of rejection can send us reeling. I mean, there's just so many things that are interrelated. And so rather than trying to develop a program ahead of time, I invited 12 people to be a part of this pilot. And we did. We had amazing candid conversations. What I ended up doing is I would do several teachings by video that they watched ahead of time. And then we would have this group coaching call. It's a kind of a flipped classroom model where the teaching is the homework and then the discussion is what happens in class.
Oh,
and
I love it.
They were such rich conversations. And I did have a process I walked them through. And there was a lot of progress made, a lot of aha moments. And so now I'm trying to come up with a new name that's a little bit snappier than Candid Conversations About Ministry and Money. Everybody said it really was that, but it was so much more. And so I'm in the midst of taking it from a really loosey-goosey, organic, I don't know what I'm doing, but if you'll join me, we'll have some fun and learn some good things. I'm now kind of narrowing it down into something a little bit. It'll end up being an e-course with a group coaching component as an option. So,
well, it's so important. You know, I just did a Q&A for She Speaks a couple weeks ago, and not only are women don't ask, but when they do, they're often shamed. And we've talked about this, and that came up in that conversation about how a woman who had set a fee to her own church was told by a woman in leadership, which we do this to each other, right? That she shouldn't be charging. And why she shouldn't be charging. And, you know, I just said, nobody would ever say that to a man. So, and I know you are tackling that too, like what to say if someone wants to push up against whatever you are charging. So very, very, very valuable stuff. So let's talk about ending well.
Do we have to? We could just beat around the bush for another half an hour and call it an episode.
Sherry is taking us way around the bend on all of this.
You know me so well. All right, fine. Amy, tell us. I got to be careful because I realize my I just pounded my hand on the my fist on the table here, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. That makes a lot of noise. So I'm sorry if anybody's ears just got blown out here. Okay, how have you ended badly in the past? We want to talk today a bit about ending well. How have you ended badly in the past? Have you ever had that experience?
So many times. And I have been unashamedly open about my patterns in the past. And my pattern in the past is that I just disappeared. So I, you know, I'm a Southern enough girl. My family grew up, everybody's from the Midwest, but I grew up in the South, and we are the masters of nice. You know, and so at all costs, be nice. And let me just say, there's a very high cost to that. And my pattern in the past would be to ghost you. We are not going to have a knockdown drag out in the middle of the street. That's for reality TV. That's for Southerners. That's what Southerners on reality TV do, right? They and their three teeth have a knockdown drag out. But in real life, Southerners, a few of us do have degrees and stuff. We just are nice and we just walk away. And that has been my very destructive pattern in the past. How about yours?
I do the same. We have an overlap there. And then the other thing I do is I write full scripts for hypothetical lives. We've talked about this in the past about, you know, this means this, and this person said this, which means that, and so all of they multiply. But I write all of those scripts with nobody's input except my own. Like I'm the only person. And so whoever is involved in the situation that needs to be brought to an end, I just mind read for them and believe myself to be accurate. And that used to feel really, really natural and logical. And the nice thing is that even as I'm saying this, I don't just want to laugh at it, but I'm feeling myself much more distanced from it. Like I'm not doing that as much. You know, there's a phrase I've started using recently, and I don't know where it came from. So I'm just going to say the Holy Spirit. And the phrase is simply, I don't understand that. I don't understand what you're saying. I don't understand this. Like just the phrase, I don't understand. And I think it's in a very neutral tone, not in a defensive or whatever. And I can't tell you how many explanations it's brought out. Like
I was about to say, it's an invitation for people to explain. That is fantastic, Sherry. Hey, listen, that's the best marriage ship, you know. really being shut up in this house for 3 years together. Carol and I have had some intense conversations, and I realized too that I fill in the blanks of his motives all the time. Yeah. And this is after writing Esther, where I talk about not being able to understand other people's motives. So of course, you know, but that is great. I don't understand.
Yeah. So all right. Wonderful. So how have you done better with ending well this time? And this time we specifically are referring to bringing Grit and Grace, the podcast, to an end.
So I was thinking about how I came into Grit and Grace, mm-hmm. and I was in a very wounded place.
Yeah.
I had just had a really huge, hurtful disappointment in my professional life. And what that did though was something good happened in the end with that, which is I was at this point, and I remember saying it to you, like, I am all about putting all the cards out on the table, all the
exact
time.
Words.
Like, I am not holding things back anymore. I don't want you to hold things back. Let's just tell the truth. Cause there was just a lot of like underlying unsaid stuff in this other situation that just ended up being awful. And so, I really committed to candid conversations. I think you renamed it that. I was like, cards on the table, cards on the table, cards on the table all the time. But you know, at the end of this, you and I had a very difficult but very good candid conversation that I said, I feel like my season's at an end. And that came after a lot of prayer, and it wasn't, I can tend to be impulsive about these kinds of conversations or decisions, but it had been like a growing feeling, not of anything bad, but just like, no, this is, you're done. Mm-hmm. You're done. You need to tell Sherry you're done. And so I've grown. I made a commitment to that, and I followed through on that commitment. And you, because you're a safe place, my friend, now we're going to cry, because you're safe to have those cards on the table and have those candid conversations, you've helped me grow in that so much.
Well, this is the first thing I can think of in 55 years of my life that I'm really proud of, how we've chosen to bring it to an end. And you started that. You started that with that original cards on the table conversation. And, you know, I've said it before, I'll say it again. I was like, wait, she wants a prenup. She's divorced. She wants a plan for the divorce before we even get married. And boy, the wisdom of that, Amy, that, you know, and I know it grew out of pain, but man, it has made such a difference. So, you know, I think one of the most important things that I've done this time was I worked really hard not to blame myself. I still regret that I didn't get back to you sooner after we had the hard conversation. I was working hard there to handle my own crud at that point. And, you know, the spiraling of what did I do this time? And okay, this time it took me 7 years to ruin it. Normally I ruin things in 2 years, but this one I managed to kill in seven and or six or however long it's been. But I really worked hard to not take it personally, to trust you. And and it was very, we have such a track record together at this point. And it was just so nice to be like, no, if it was me, she would have told me earlier. Like, I can really trust that that would be true. So it was as hard as the process has been, or as hard as the reality has been, the process actually hasn't been as hard as really accepting the reality that this was time. Wanting to be a healthy partner who handles her own crud rather than expecting you to carry a plate of trash that doesn't belong to you, to use your metaphor from Exhale. That I feel like I might have done a little bit better this time around. And
it was excellent. And you apologize for waiting so long, but the truth is it still all worked together. You were dealing with your stuff and you had already dealt with it. I was starting to create a story in my mind. Wow. Sherry is really mad at me. But then I was like, no, stop. Ask Sherry. And that's when I came back and was like, hey, are we okay?
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah. I saw that several days ago myself. But that was growth. It shows the growth in both of us through the whole process.
It's true.
Even when it's a little messy, it's still growth. I mean, huge growth, really, Sherry.
Yeah.
This is really a big change.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I came up with a question.
You did. It's so good.
And here it is. You can answer first. What's the biggest change that's happened in you because of or during Grit and Grace? Mine is very much because of, I think.
Oh, man. And of course, you came up with this question and you told me this morning. So I'm flying off the cuff here. So I want you to go first. I want you to go first because you've had a little time to think about it.
Okay. Well, I had this big revelation the other morning. I've told you that I've been reading Brené Brown's new book, Atlas of the Heart.
Yes.
And I just don't know how Brené, she should be paying rent in my head. How does she know all of this about me? So one of the things I think that has happened during Grit and Grace is, of course, we started with this focus on perfectionism. Mm-hmm. And it was because it was the thing that we both struggled with the most was perfectionism. And we had both grown in it, but I think we were still kind of in it, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
And here was the realization that I had the other day. So I'm reading Atlas of the Heart. I got to the end and she is doing kind of a synopsis of mm-hmm. what all of this conversation about emotion means. And I start thinking, when we really drop our perfectionism mm-hmm. and we begin to allow ourselves to be human, mm-hmm. I think back to that first interview with Michelle Cushat and that moment that just broke me. We're just mm-hmm. human. Mm-hmm. And we start to allow ourselves to be human. That in itself necessitates that we begin dealing with our emotions. And you know from behind the scenes conversations that I have been dealing with my emotions more in the last maybe 3 years than I ever have in my entire life. Well, Brené has this chart in the back of the book and this concept that I was like, all the light bulbs went on. And I feel like Grit and Grace did this for me. So what she talks about is this concept of near enemies. And she said that our worst enemies in our attempt to become human, to mm-hmm. embrace our emotions, to do relationships better, are not the far enemies, they're the near enemies. So let me explain. Mm-hmm. So if you are trying to become a compassionate person, like the best version of yourself who's full of compassion, and that's something that I've been working on, and empathy. So a far enemy of that is ill will or total lack of care to understand, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So that's a far enemy. That's sure. like the opposite, the mm-hmm. antithesis. But a near enemy of that might be sympathy, which she defines in the book as very different than empathy.
Yeah, yeah.
So sympathy actually kind of still others people, but a near enemy is something that looks like the real thing, but is actually a very destructive counterfeit. Okay. So you following me, you're looking, and I hope our listeners are, this is so groundbreaking for me. So for example, she talks about these skill sets that we need to be better human beings. And she's talking about developing grounded confidence. And so the first example that she gives is knowing and applying the language of human experience and emotion. This is an area that I have wanted to grow in, mm-hmm. but the near enemy of that is shaping emotion and experience to fit what we know.
Ooh.
Ooh. Which is nice.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Which is nice. I'll give you an example. So maybe our listeners will help connect all the dots. Last weekend, how the change has affected me. Last weekend, Barry and I had put on the calendar to go to the mountains with Lynn and Greg Cowell.
Mm-hmm.
Lynn and I have not seen each other since the beginning of COVID. So we We've done all this work together. Oh. We've launched this whole book. We have not seen each other. And because Barry and I are planning on taking a vacation in the fall, we had not planned any vacation for the summer. Mm. And we're tired. We're worn out. We need vacation so badly. We were looking forward to this mountain trip so much. And then I got COVID. To say that I was disappointed was such a grave understatement. And yet for a couple hours, I kept it's just the way it is. It's just the way it is. You just have to be okay. It's just the way it is. It's just the way it is. You got to be okay. It's just, I was trying to make my emotions fit the circumstances.
Yep. And have we been conditioned to do that or what?
Oh my goodness. So that I could be nice. And also so that I didn't really feel what I felt. Mm-hmm. And then I paused and I thought about the counseling I've had, the spiritual direction I've had, the conversations we've had on Grit and Grace. And I thought, I'm just going to sit here and feel sad and disappointed and acknowledge it and then move on. And, you know, really it took, I was probably 30 minutes.
Yeah.
I just let myself cry a little bit and be really disappointed. And then I was okay. Mm. And I was like, wow, that sounds so minor, but it is so major for me.
Huge.
Just so major for me. So the near enemy that I've been embracing is to try to shape and mold my feelings to fit what I think it should look like. So it did look like that most of the time. Mm-hmm. But what it was is it subtly was just chipping away at me and chipping away at me all the time. So I would say that's the big thing in dropping my perfectionism, embracing my humanity, that I now can recognize the difference between the true things that God is trying to do in my life and the near enemy to those things, which were all really rooted in that perfectionism.
I love this so much. And the picture you just painted is not of your emotions running away with you, or of you being controlled completely by your emotions, or you looking at your emotions and saying, this is all that's real forever and ever, and everybody must now bow to my emotions.
Right.
Which I think is what people, I think somehow we get conditioned to think that if we give our emotions any time of day, they will just take over. And, and then we'll never, ever get ourselves back. And what you described sounds so healthy. It sounds like your God-given emotions, you gave them their time and processed and metabolized them.
Yeah. And so they're not going to fester. And I really have tried to delineate between feeling and wallowing.
Yes.
You know, there's a line in there somewhere and I'm still figuring out where that is, but yeah, much, much better, much more human.
All right. Well, what's the biggest change that's happened in me because of Grit and Grace? Wow. That's, this is a hard one to pick. I think the one I'll go ahead and pick for right now is because of the work that God has been doing in your life over the last few years, especially around racial reconciliation. You really exposed me to start understanding the influence of systems, and whether it's things like any form of systemic oppression, any form of, I think one of the quotes you used in a recent episode was just the way we are trained to think, the way we've been conditioned to think. And, you know, I made a break from perfectionism 10 years ago. It's literally been 10 years since I stood on that stage and I called out perfectionism as being a bully. And I wanted to break the cycle for the women in my family. But ever since then, I've lived in fear of slipping back into perfectionism. And I've been white knuckling it in this supposed no man's land, because scripture says there's no fear in love. But I've still been living in this place of fear, and it's been fear of going backwards. But that's not the same as living in love. That's not the same as living in freedom. And I've been wondering what's wrong. Like, why am I not making the kind of progress that I would like to? Why don't I have the amount of joy and just freedom that scripture promises? and to realize that some of it is systemic, that it's not all individual. It's not, I mean, yes, personal responsibility, absolutely. But there are things that come from our church systems, our society as a whole, our family systems. And that's been hard. It's been hard to face. You know, we've talked on and off about, you know, marital struggles throughout this, this podcast. And one of the things that I realized, I'll keep it brief, but I realized that there was a form of ableism that I was raised with, that if you were smart and if you had your, but having your social cues, being able to socialize properly, both of those were very, very important in the home I grew up in. And then I married somebody who's on the spectrum, and I didn't know that he's on the spectrum until, you know, a few years ago. Well, some people who are on the spectrum often have a different way of socializing. And I have resisted and resisted and resisted. And for the longest time, it's like, well, what's wrong with me? Why can't I personally adapt better? Why can't I be more loving and more accepting, more understanding? And when I finally realized, hang on a second, there is this whole conditioning that I had. And I'm not blaming anybody. I'm not here to throw anybody under the bus, but to realize there's actually a larger name for this, and to realize that that's a force my husband faces when he goes about the world every waking moment, and that he came home to it, really helped me go, oh, this is not an individual battle that I'm fighting to just become a more understanding person. This is a larger problem.
Wow. That
I've been conditioned in my family, in my church, in my society. And I can't put into words yet, Amy, I don't know. I can't put into words why knowing it's bigger than me has helped me step up and take more responsibility, rather than just feeling like somehow it was a personal defect. I can't put that into words, because I know there's a lot of people who feel like if you call it systemic, that you're absolving yourself of any responsibility. And I'm like, I don't understand this yet. But when I say it's systemic, I then feel more responsibility for it.
And I felt that about race. That's exactly really? My response. Because it, when you can say, oh, this isn't all my fault. It just releases you in some way so that you can step into it more.
It's
counterintuitive, but I totally know what you mean.
You know, there's a book I read a couple of years ago called It Didn't Start With You. And I think that's maybe what I'm touching on here, is it didn't start with me. I didn't invent this. And now that I have knowledge of it, I can take fuller responsibility with God's power and with his grace, and make changes. And Amy, none of this was on the radar when we started Written Grace. Like, none of it was on the radar. Like, we were a couple of perfectionists trying to behave our way to becoming better. And because of my growing understanding of some of the systemic conditioning that we've gone through as women, so many areas of life, I am starting to feel a lot more of that freedom and flexibility in ways that, I'm just grateful for. That's all I'll say.
Powerful stuff. So, Sherry, what words of wisdom do you have for our friends who want to be able to end well?
I would say begin with the end in mind. And, you know, again, you did that. You set us up for the fact that there would be an end, and you set us up for how to do that. I've been reading a book called The Powers of Two. I think I've mentioned it in another episode, how relationships drive creativity. And it has really helped normalize this whole idea of ending. Like, it goes through famous scientific partners, musical partners, ballet partners. I mean, it's fascinating. Authors that partnered or, you know, worked closely with their editor. And so it's very normal. It's very normal for things to come to an end. And, you know, for somebody, I'm an Enneagram too. I want to collect my people and hold on to them forever. Like, so it's helped me stop idealizing and idolizing the BFF model of life. And doesn't mean that we won't still be friends, but it does mean that I'm not judging my worth and my value on whether or not we are continuing to do Grit and Grace, for example. And reading, the other thing is reading so many stories of partnerships that ended so badly. I mean, truly tragically, it has made me so grateful again for our process, even, even though I've grieved the end product, the process is something I've been grateful for. I'm like, oh my goodness, we've not dealt with any of that. And I'm glad. How about you?
You will be one of my BFFs forever.
You're stuck with me, girlfriend. You're stuck with me.
Well, for me, there was a quote that I think encapsulates this whole cards on the table, candid conversations, the best. And it's from Peter Bromberg, who said, when we avoid difficult conversations, we trade short-term discomfort for long-term dysfunction.
Okay. How did he, talking about rent in the brain, that encapsulates my entire life. It's just wrong.
I read it and I was like, whoa, like the light bulbs were like paparazzi level, you know? And I was like, I'm not willing to make that trade any longer.
Yeah.
Because if we really value our friendships and our relationships, that long-term dysfunction eventually will dissolve the friendship. Yeah. Or the relationship, and I'm not willing to do that anymore. So I think we embrace the short-term discomfort of the difficult conversations instead.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, here's the thing, a lot of us, now I'm speaking for myself and maybe some of our friends who are listening. We don't know how to have those conversations, and we don't know how to go through the short-term discomfort. But you just illustrated for us earlier, you know, when you got the news that you weren't going to be able to go on your weekend getaway with the Cowles, to be able to sit and lean into that discomfort. You know, mm-hmm. So many of us been conditioned to avoid the discomfort at all cost, that it's the end of the world. And so I think this is a great illustration of the value of learning those skills to be able to embrace and metabolize our emotions. The long-term impact is huge.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Well, we want to just wrap up here with how our listeners can stay in touch with us. The thing we have agreed to, Amy has agreed to, is that we are open to future spontaneous episodes of Grit and Grace. And I will go ahead and say one that I would love for us to at least be considering is, I'm going to put you on the spot. And it's okay if the answer is no. Have you had a chance to start the book, The Lord is My Courage?
I haven't yet, but okay. I will.
Okay. So KJ Ramsey has a new book out called The Lord is My Courage. I am just loving it. I'm literally reading it one little chapter at a time. And when the time is right for you, no pressure. I just feel like that's the kind of book that we could have a really fun conversation
about. Let's do it.
Let's do it. I think that will be one that comes up. And with no pressure of sponsorships, it'll be done just like this, what we're doing here. We are literally going to post the video of this as well as the audio unedited. The only thing I'm going to do is add some music into the audio file. So Grit and Grace live unedited, kind of scary. And then how can listeners stay in touch with each of us, and why might they want to? What do you have coming up, Amy?
Well, all the things for me are at amycarroll.org. And so you can find out about Esther there. You can find out about, well, you can just subscribe. So I will be continuing to blog through the steps that I've talked about a little bit here and more in Esther, Listen, Feel, Do, and Speak. So you can subscribe and get one or two of those a month. And then I also do coaching for speakers and writers. You can find that information there. And finally, if you are interested in traveling with me to France or Italy, you can find out more information about the travel there. So still lots of things going on. It's exciting, but this will be a shift in life to not be doing Grit and Grace on the regular anymore. But Sherry, tell us how people can keep in touch with you.
Well, probably the, I have three websites. I know that's too many. I should do what you do. SherryGregory.com is a great place to start. It's the one I need to update. The place I spend most of my time is sensitiveandstrong.com. And then I also have rightbesideyou.com. That's WRITE. And so Sensitive and Strong is my ministry to those who are highly sensitive Christian women. And I blog there. I also have a membership called the Sensitive and Strong Community Cafe. And then when I'm wearing the Right Beside You hat, that's my coaching hat for speakers, coaches, and writers who happen to also be HSP Christian women. The more I work with HSPs, the more I discover that we do ministry and business just a little bit different. So, but I've been cleaning out my office, Amy, and I found a binder that it has the Grit and Grace Girls Getaway that we did a number of years ago. And again, I'm going to put you on the spot, so feel free to tell me I'm going to have to make a retraction. But I was wondering if any of our friends who are listening wanted to book Amy and Sherry to speak.
Yes, please. Grit and Grace Girls Getaway or an Exhale Weekend.
Yeah.
Either one. Yep.
That would be so much fun to Fantastic. Be able to do. And I am dying to come on one of your trips with you. I'm going to start saving my pennies as long as Rafiki, the geriatric diabetic cat, doesn't keep draining my finances.
Listen, we did our first trip to France back in April, and it was beyond.
I'm so
in
glad.
Every way. Like, not only is France my complete obsession now because it's just dreamy there, but the ministry that actually happened. It was so great because Wendy had said, Amy had started worrying, like, is this fake? Do we make this up just so we could go to France? but it turned out that God just showed up and did some of the most powerful healing. It was wonderful.
That is wonderful. Well, I will be on one of those trips one of these days.
Okay. All right. Well, friends, it's been a wonderful ride. And we're so glad you've taken it with us.
Check out this episode's webpage at gritandgracethepodcast.com/episode269.
There you'll find this week's transcript and links to all the things we've talked about today.
Okay, this is where I choke up. For today, grow your grit.
Embrace God's grace. We're a mess, y'all.
And as God reveals the next step to live your one life well,
we'll be cheering you on. So take it.
Yeah, bursting out crying at "we'll be cheering you on" probably wouldn't.
Probably we'll be wouldn't. Cheering you on!
Oh, friend, it's been a great journey. Thank you.
Thank you.